Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi. Welcome back to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Great podcast for you today. We'll kick it off with the New Markets Newsmakers featuring our newly mentored senior editor, Sean Hooley of Mass Device. He'll be joining Chris and myself, reviewing the week's news. Then we get to hear from managing editor Kayleen Brown and Dennis Chang, Vice President of Cardiac Diagnostic Solutions at Boston Scientific. Following that is our keynote conversation. Chris Neumarker sits down with Peter Manzuso, Company Group Chairman of Vision at Johnson & Johnson. Before we begin this podcast, I'd like to invite you to join us at Device Talks West. It's happening on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. We've got a great lineup. We've got Tim Schmidt of Johnson & Johnson kicking things off. I will have Anna Zdwaa of Moon Surgical as keynote, Ray Cohen, formerly of Axonics, talking about innovation and successful exits, and much, much more. We'll have great conversations around telesurgery, around pulse field ablation, about connected health, and much, much more. So join us at Device Talks West, October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Go to west.devicetalks.com to register. This episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Interpower. For more information about Interpower, go to interpower.com. Now let's begin this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Neumarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well.
I just heard the beep of your smoke alarm, Chris. You're gonna attend to those, right?
Oh yeah, that's been half my morning, man. They like the former owners of my house obviously like replaced all the batteries in one area of the house, like on a single day. So now it's the new day, like years from now, and all the smoke alarms downstairs are beeping. So,
all right, everybody. August 1st is Chris Neumarker's smoke alarm day. Yeah. Remember that. We'll celebrate this every year.
Actually, you know, I think last year around the same time, there was all the smoke alarms upstairs are beeping.
Whoa. You're in some kind of smoke alarm vortex.
Smoke alarm. That's good. I'm glad they put a lot of smoke alarms around the house. That's good. Good home ownership there. So,
well, before we begin, we have to bring in our new senior editor.
Yeah.
Sean Hooley, formerly known as Associate Editor Sean Hooley.
Yeah. Congrats, Sean.
Congratulations, Sean.
Yeah. Thank you. Everything has changed.
It is. I know, right?
It's a new era.
The birds sing a little sweeter. The air just a little crisper. Just a little spring in your step, right?
Oh, yeah.
Feel the glow go on the weekend.
So, Chris, your twins completely blew up the joint. What the heck, man? They traded everybody away.
I know. Yeah, what the heck?
Yeah. We were just there. We were rooting them on just a couple of months ago. Go Twins.
I mean, why would they trade them all away? Because, I mean, the score of that game was so close.
Yeah, that wasn't
a good game. Something like 18-1 or something? It was like, oh.
That wasn't a good game, yeah. And then the Red Sox beat them 13-1 earlier this week. So
got
three off of Cody Clemens, Roger Clemens' kid, who cannot pitch like his old man.
Oh, my gosh. That.
And he's also an infielder, so that's, you really shouldn't be expected to.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, his dad did it. I mean, so.
Has his dad ever played the field? No. So, you know.
There you go.
Son's got something over dad. He's done both.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway.
Was that the straw that broke the camel's back?
I guess.
You think that Red Scott Fox thumping, like doing some laps around.
The GM was just threw his laptop across the room and said, that's it.
That's it.
Everybody out of here.
Everybody out of here.
We're going to start over next year.
Yeah, I mean, there might be. I think they're shopping the team around. So, I mean, you think, I mean, generally, I'm trying to remember because I'm not an expert on this, but if you're trying to sell the team, like sell the franchise, do you want the franchise to do better? Or are you just like, meh, we're not going to own this after it goes, let the next owners assemble something?
Well, I guess you can lean into the payroll flexibility. Like, we're not paying anybody anything, so, you know, you've got all this flexibility. But you're right.
Yeah.
I think it typically helps to sell a winning franchise. The Celtics sold after winning their championship.
there.
They did pretty darn well. So
come on, Pole Ed family. Let's like beef this team up.
All right, let's roll into our new markers newsmaker.
Yep. Number five, we've got Medtronic moving forward on with infused bone graft to they've had a IDE study, and the committee that was monitoring the study which was looking at infused for trans foraminal lumbar interbody fusion TLIF procedures, it said it met the predefined criteria for early success. So, based on that, Medtronic's gonna, prepare a PMA submission to FDA to move forward on this. So, they're moving forward with infused bone graft. Interesting product because, Medtronic, basically 8 years ago, settled thousands of lawsuits around that product, over claims that Medtronic was promoting off-label use of it. It was one of the, really big off-label use cases of the, controversies over the past decade. So there were accusations that, personal injury had been caused by that, but, Medtronic's moved on for that. And, now we're seeing more stuff going on with Infuse.
All right. So this is part of their cranial and spinal program.
Exactly. Yeah. Which has been one of the bright spots over at Medtronic. I think it was the most recent earnings call that CEO Jeff Martha was kind of suggesting their success. He didn't name Stryker, but he said major competitors spinning off their spine, mm-hmm. Selling off their spine business. Amid our success, so obviously pointing to that as a positive thing for them.
All right, well, good news for Medtronic. Best of luck with that. Let's move on to number four.
Yeah, number four on the list, we've got more competition with pulse field ablation systems. We got Biotronic saying that they've entered a strategic distribution agreement with CardioFocus for their PFA technology, and it's making Biotronic their exclusive distributor in Europe. So just a really really hot space right now. A lot of a lot of excitement around the potential for this technology to treat AFib without some of the complications you saw in the past with radio frequency ablation.
Yeah, I think we're up to five companies that are offering PFA programs. So
we got Boston Scientific, Farapulse. We got Medtronic with Pulse Select and Affera. We got J&J with Varipulse. We got Abbott with Volt, they've been moving forward with as well. So yeah, now we got this combo as well. And also there's Field Medical that's, developing pulse field ablation tech right now. That's run by the, Farapulse founders. So
yep. Steve Mickelson, we'll have him on the podcast in a couple of weeks, and he'll be
fantastic.
He'll be at Device Talks West, giving a presentation on Field Medical. They raised, $35 million earlier this year. So.
Yeah, it's hard not to run a story in Mass Device right now that does not have a plug for this show coming up in October. Because you're covering so much of the industry.
I know it's interesting. I've been putting stuff on LinkedIn every time there's a mention of someone who's at the conference, and I'm like, I've done four or five this week already. So I guess we're hitting the right folks, which is
got a good lineup here. So.
We'll keep it coming. Appreciate the help spreading the word.
Yeah. That's right.
What's number three, Chris Neumarger?
Hey, number three on the list, we've got CardioSense winning FDA clearance for their CardioTag wearable sensor. And this is kind of like this nice little vertical sensor that sticks on the middle of your chest, and it's measuring both, it's measuring ECG, it's measuring PPG, it's measuring SCG. It kind of really makes them, they're competing more in this whole space that we, see other companies in, iRhythm, Bardy DX, AliveCor, these wearable devices that are, kind of supplanting the old school Holter monitors they used to send people back with, to measure what was going on with arrhythmias.
We'll have Quentin Blackford, the CEO of iRhythm, on the podcast in a couple of weeks. And iRhythm's always, I always have trouble with the word rhythm. Do you have any words like you have just have trouble spelling? You can't remember if the Y goes before the H or the T. Like, I've got this blind spot with the word rhythm, and I never get it right.
I catch myself, you know, a lot of times with, you know, it's really weird. It's simple. I know it in my cerebral cortex that I am there as T-H-E-R-E and their Xbox is T-H-E-I-R, but I still, mm-hmm. you know, my whole life, I still like type it sometimes and like, you know, see the little squiggly line for my Grammarly and I'm like, Chris, what are you doing? Come on. Yeah, man.
That, and the other one is rain, as in rain and horses, and rain as in our rain. Like, I'll change it. I'm like, no, it was right, dummy, like the other way. So
rain.
Languages, I know the weather never gets to me. It's more and more of the weather. I need the G in there. Sean, anything trip you up in the whole writing thing?
Nothing comes to mind. There's a lot of words where, like, rhythm is one of those words where I it's not a question of knowing where the H and T go. It's more just that I'll type too fast. Like they trip me up typing less because I don't know them and more just because I'm thinking a mile a minute. But
yeah. So it's great to see this kind of diagnostic technology. In fact, New York Times this week wrote an article. It was actually a positive article about MedTech on about CT cardiac calcium scoring tests, which can look at the plaque and the calcium in your arteries and see how vulnerable you are to a heart attack. So, and it's offering a better measure than you know, just your cholesterol is this high and you need to take drugs. So. A nice little PR win for MedTech this week in the New York Times. Yeah. So check that out. Chris Newmarket, do you want to tag Sean Hooley? Is he going to take over number two here?
I think Sean needs to take this over here. We've got like number two on the list is a lot of news this week out of Dexcom. Like, you know, what have we been covering, Sean?
Yeah, well, as part of the company's second quarter earnings, they announced that they have a CEO succession plan in place, which will see Chief Operating Officer Jake Leach take over the corner office as of the start of next year, January 1st, 26. Kevin Sayer is stepping down. He will stay on as a member of the board, as executive chair at the point of transition. But yeah, this is something Tom pointed out to me on LinkedIn that we've actually discussed this on the podcast before, that it looked like the likely direction of travel with Dexcom and you know, who would be next in line, and Leach has been there basically since the start. He was a developer of multiple generations of CGMs and joined the company in 2004 to lead the development of sensor electronics for the company's first commercial CGM. So he's been there for 21 years. Someone who's been very involved in sort of the growth of the company. He was COO, took over that role in 2022. He was previously chief technology officer, and this year, only a few months ago, he was promoted to an expanded role of president. So he's been sort of climbing up the ranks, and yeah, now he's going to be the company's CEO.
His degree is in electrical and biomedical engineering, so out of UCLA. So it's and as you're like kind of mentioning, like he rose up through the company, like starting out as an engineer and, you know, working on R&D. That's kind of cool. Like, I mean, you sometimes see people running medtech companies. I mean, it's great. You can have really great MBA CEOs, but, you know, there is something like cool when your CEO is someone with that engineering background.
Agreed. And I think it's great that he's a tech oriented person, but I guess look at Dexcom and I see, Sean, looking forward, do we see Dexcom being more of a consumer company or a medtech company with a strong consumer business? Like, what do you think the next 5 years, what are they projecting?
I would lean towards the former, in terms of they've already been sort of, you know, they don't want to just be a diabetes company. They want to be a health technology company, and that, you know, with the way the over-the-counter glucose sensor or biosensor thing is going, it definitely seems like the direction of travel for all diabetes tech is in the consumer, I guess,
yeah, good point.
Direction for sure. So obviously, I can't personally speak to the conversations they're having at Dexcom, but from the outside, it definitely seems like everything's headed towards more of a consumer-focused, you know, they want to make sure they're developing, you know, whereas a lot of medtech companies are developing devices that obviously benefit patients, but are designed for doctors to, you know, whether it eases their workflow or makes whatever procedures go faster, more efficient, more successful, whereas a lot of the diabetes tech, CGM, you know, maybe the most evident example of this is designed for the user, where it's making it as easy as possible for the user to apply it, keep it on, be comfortable, transmit their data, analyze their data, all those things.
In fact, they have an over-the-counter, you know, CGM. They got the Stelo, which, I mean, I just Googled it up right now. And, oh, the biosensor packs are like, yeah, I mean, it looks like for, you can go buy, you know, like, it's pretty wild that if you want to, I mean, if I want to measure my blood glucose all the time, I mean, I could just go and buy a Stelo or buy a Lingo from Abbott. So it's pretty, yeah, they are kind of really branching out being, I mean, they've got this very much like we're helping people manage a chronic condition. It's more like through the health providers, but they've, you know, they've definitely branched out more like, and if you just, you know, want to follow your blood glucose, you know, we now have this over-the-counter monitor you can buy and start doing that.
No, this was clearly a long-term bit of succession planning, but it's interesting. It'd be interesting to see who the next CEO of the company is, like we saw with Ashley McEvoy joining Insulet. Of course, she's a med tech person, but she had such a strong consumer background. You wonder if we'll see more consumer-oriented people take the CEO roles maybe next time. But Jake Leach is a younger man. I think he'll be at the helm for quite a while if Dexcom continues on this trajectory. So,
yeah.
And Chris, to your point, I posted on LinkedIn, we'll have Girish Naganathan, the Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at Dexcom. He'll be at Device Talks West giving a presentation. Sean Hooley hooked us up and got Dexcom to speak. So grateful for the help, Sean, and looking forward to hearing Dexcom's story at Device Talks West, October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Chris Neumacher, do you want to just let Sean hold on to the mic and lead us into number one?
Keep it going, man.
Yeah, so number one is the Diabetes Technology Innovation Special Report. It's a project been in the works for a while. Obviously, Mass Device has produced a few special reports recently with surgical robotics and orthopedics, so expanded that to diabetes technology. It's an all-encompassing recap of what's going on in the diabetes technology space world. It includes a list of the 10 largest diabetes tech companies in the world, their revenues year over year, certain information about those companies, and then a large chunk of it is content created over the course of the American Diabetes Association scientific sessions, which were last month, or actually, no, 2 months ago in June. It is now August as we record.
Yeah, you're over there in Chicago. So
yeah, in Chicago, I was there interviewing loads of key figures. So there's a couple interviews in there with Abbott and Insulet. There's also information about Dexcom related to an interview with none other than its next CEO, Jake Leach, that took place at ADA as well. So there's all sorts of details about all sorts of different companies, all sorts of different technologies, whether it's CGMs like Dexcom's and Abbott's, whether it's implantable CGMs that are sort of making waves like Senseonics and GlucoTrack, insulin pumps, new news out of Medtronic and Beta Bionics with their patch pump development, Tandem and Insulet continue to sort of roll along as the leaders there. Tons of information, lots of work, lots of articles, sponsored as well by Jabil. So thank you to them for sponsoring that. And yeah, lots of work went into this. I'm glad it's live now. So hope that everyone goes to Mass Device Diabetes Technology Special Report, free to download, and can access all this useful information.
Yeah, we don't want, I mean, it's just such a wealth of information in that report about this just like really exciting space. I mean, I guess we don't want to tease out too much what's in it. We want people to come here, just download that PDF and dive into it. But I mean, what tell people what something that you thought was especially interesting or to you as you did all this reporting and got this together.
That's a good question. I mean, certainly when it comes to the way that the companies stack up in the largest companies in the world, you know, there wasn't much change. I did a similar list last year. This year's list includes Beta Bionics after they went public, so grew from 9 to 10 because we have access to their financial reports now publicly. But yeah, definitely, while there's not much change, I think that something that sticks out is sort of the way, you know, CGM makers seem to have a stronger business revenue-wise, and obviously that relates to how long they've been in the game and how long CGMs have been prevalent, whereas automated insulin delivery systems have taken a little bit longer. But, you know, Medtronic and Insulet are right there. Abbott and Dexcom, as you would see from the initial list without the revenues on drug delivery business news, are the top two. So what sticks out to me is the way that sort of plays out, and maybe, you know, now that we know that, we can keep an eye on how that might change if it changes in the future. So that's something to keep an eye on.
It's interesting to go along with that whole consumer theme that Medtronic right now is in the process of spinning off their, I mean, they have one of the largest diabetes businesses in the world, and they're in the process of spinning that. You know, it's going to separate in some way as this new company called MiniMed, but I remember a lot of the arguments behind that was that it has more of a consumer bent to the business, you know, versus everything else, you know, Medtronic's
doing. Especially with Medtronic partnering with Abbott. So now, you know, Medtronic is pretty much the only company in there that's developing its own proprietary pumps and CGMs that pair together. You know, the rest of them just partner with one another. But then last year, it's about a year ago, I think it was August 7th of 2024, was the day that they announced that Medtronic and Abbott were pairing Libre CGMs specially made for Medtronic pumps. So that should be able to reach a lot more users, which again sort of folds into that idea that consumer is king and people want more options, more, you know, flexibility with their diabetes devices.
All right. Well, great work, Sean. Is it nice to take a moment and kind of look at the big picture? Is it clarifying for you? Just kind of to take a rest as opposed to the rat-a-tat-tat of the daily news cycle, just to kind of sit down and write something big, or do you absolutely hate doing that? And
honestly, like it didn't feel like there was a change in the day-to-day because it sort of followed ADA where I got back and I was like, all right, time to put this together. So it was more or less, you know, just a continuation of that reporting, just piling all that in on top of getting that list of the biggest companies together and, you know, doing some math on year-over-year revenue change, which is always the trickiest task for a journalist. But yeah, it's good to take stock and take a longer look at you know, overlying or underlying themes and trends. But yeah,
and Chris, people can find the download link pretty easily on Mass Device.
Found it pretty easily, you know, just at the top bar. I mean, right now, as we talk on Friday, it's in the homepage rotator. But if you go to the bar at the top for special content, special reports, you know, you can see links to, you know, check out the Diabetes Technology Innovation Special Report, as well as, like, yeah, the past special reports we've been gating on Mass Device this year, such as Orthopedic Device Company Special Report, Surgical Robotics Special Report. But these have really proved to be popular. And as you kind of said, it's just a great opportunity to kind of step back a bit out of, you know, the daily, you know, churn of just covering all this news and, like, looking what the lay of the land is. So I'm really looking forward to this being a thing we do annually and, you know, circle back and do this.
It sounds super smart. And of course, I posted about it on LinkedIn. Chris, you did as well. I'm sure it's on Mass Device. So if you're following Chris, Sean, or myself, you'll have access to the link there as well. And if you're not following us, by gum, why not? We're delightful. Look at us. Listen, we're fun people, right, guys? We have a good time. Yeah, we love medtech. Why wouldn't you follow us?
Yeah, we're the cool kids.
We don't attempt to talk baseball on LinkedIn either, most of the time.
Oh.
Not often. Sometimes I'll try to draw a weak parallel between baseball and medtech, but I don't go to that well too often.
It was a home run. They struck out on...
Well, that's just words. Anyway, all right. Well, great job, gentlemen. And folks, make sure you check out the report. And of course, join us at Device Talks West on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center.
Great.
Thanks again to Chris Newmarker and Sean Hooley for joining us on the Newmarker's Newsmakers. Now I'd like to bring in a conversation between our managing editor, Kayleen Brown, and Dennis Cheng. He is vice president of Cardiac Diagnostic Solutions at Boston Scientific. The interview was recorded at Device Talks Boston.
Dennis Chang, Vice President of Cardiac Diagnostic Solutions for Boston Scientific. Thank you so much for joining me on the Future of MedTech.
Hi, Kayleen. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here today.
I wanted to get your insights into what the future of artificial intelligence could look like. But before we do that, I kind of zoom back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand your journey into MedTech, but why artificial intelligence? Like, how'd that come about?
So I was fortunate enough, about maybe 4 years ago, to join our cardiac diagnostics business. It's a growing business within Boston. It's one of our newer businesses. And really with diagnostics, artificial intelligence is really sort of the underpinning of a lot of what we do. And so I like being on the cutting edge of things. And so this is a perfect spot for me.
So you don't normally hear, or at least from my experience, I don't usually hear that you came into artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
So it seems like Boston Scientific came first and then artificial intelligence came after. So that's so interesting. Was it love at first sight when you started with the AI side?
A little bit. And so, you know, talking about my Boston journey a little bit. So most of Boston, you know, our legacy is around therapeutics. How do we help treat a lot of the conditions for patients? And, you know, as we've seen this space continue to evolve, I think where we saw future opportunity for the business was, how do we move upstream from the therapeutics? How do we help diagnose? How do we help connect those that might need our therapies most with our therapeutics? And so that was sort of a natural connection for diagnostics into therapeutics. So that's kind of how I got to diagnostics within Boston.
Now, I'm always kind of interested, do you refer to artificial intelligence as AI internally, or do you use other terminology like digital health, connected health? Like, what do you use?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think AI, or artificial intelligence, it's probably got a lot of definitions depending on who you ask. You know, other versions of it I've heard described as algorithms, machine learning, deep neural networks. And so I think AI is often sort of maybe the broad sort of category for all of those. And so I'd say within Boston, it's a combination of all those references, maybe depending on the specific application that we're referring to.
Makes a lot of sense. It also helps lead into some of the challenges. Instead of bucketing it together, let's try to break it down. What are some of the challenges in AI or challenges in machine learning?
Yeah.
Break it down for me.
Yeah, you know, there's probably a handful of them. You know, we're kind of early into the journey, I think, as an industry. I think part of it is AI has sort of that reputation of being a little bit of a black box. And so what actually is AI? How does AI come up with its output? And so I think it's sometimes harder to trust something if you don't fully understand it. So I think that's a little bit of the challenge that AI is working through right now. I think maybe a couple others that are related is, you know, when we think about clinicians today, they get an overwhelming amount of data from imaging, from lab results, insurance claims. And then with the rise of consumer wearables, that's really sort of ballooned how much data is coming to clinicians and what they have to deal with. And so sometimes I think AI gets associated with that data deluge. And I think it's a real challenge that as an industry, we need to work with. The other piece that I do think that creates some of the challenge in the space is when we think about clinicians, they are often working across multiple manufacturers that are medical grade, but also consumer grade. And so there's that workflow challenge where, you know, how many clicks does it take to get to the answer they're looking for? And if you're navigating 3, 4, you know, a dozen systems, that can be a challenge. And so I think that's still another really big opportunity for the industry to help make it easier for clinicians.
Makes a lot of sense. So we're talking about the challenges. I mean, everything challenge has an opportunity
for
around
sure.
it. So yeah. We're talking about the data input, the maybe opportunity around that is finding a more standardized way to do the input or to have a human eye or a clinician to look at the data before it goes in. I mean, what are some of the opportunities around these challenges?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we talked a little around AI, not understanding, you know, how it's generated. So I think there's certainly opportunity for us to validate the output out of AI so that people have confidence in it. You know, I think we really view AI as being augmentative to the clinician. How can they be, you know, how can AI be a trusted co-pilot? And so for Boston, we recently, you know, had a study that helped validate our AI performance relative to how expert EPs might classify certain rhythms. And so the connection there was really strong. We were really pleased with the performance of our BeatLogic AI. And so I think those are examples as an industry we can do to help really kind of reaffirm confidence in the technologies that we have. And then I think as AI gets better, because it's, you know, we're generating a lot of data, a lot of noise in the system, I think where the rubber will meet the road is, can we help actually deliver actionable, meaningful insight, cut the noise out? I think we hear that really regularly. Like, there's too much data. I don't have time to go through it. And if we could really help segment and prioritize where clinicians should focus, I think that's where it'll be the most impactful.
I want to dig that into that a little more. So the opportunity around the workflow.
Yep.
Where do you see that?
It's a great question. I think for us, workflow, I think really it probably digs into like understanding what our clinicians actually have to go through their day in and day out, understanding which systems they're navigating. And again, are we making it more complicated than it needs to be? I think understanding all the other systems they have to navigate through. And so I think there's at some point going to be an opportunity for a more collaborative, almost data ecosystem where it, again, puts the user maybe at the center of it. I know that might sound a little bit contradictory because every manufacturer probably has its own version of that. But I do think that's going to come to some opportunity for us in the whole space of how do we actually streamline it for the clinician.
How do you think the industry is responding to artificial intelligence, the challenges, the opportunities? I mean, from your perspective, how have you seen the response?
Yeah, it's I think there's probably a spectrum. I think, sometimes AI can be a bit of a kind of a fancy buzzword. And so I think that's probably one end of the spectrum. But I do think, we've seen others in this space really try and validate it. And I think that's a really important part of gaining confidence for the AI in the system. I do think there are others in the space that are also looking at, hey, how do we actually synthesize and consolidate all the different data streams that are coming into the marketplace? And so I do think there are different spots within the whole AI ecosystem where we're seeing opportunity for maybe multiple different players. And I think there are some where they're trying to take a more agnostic approach too, to help, again, kind of synthesize all the information together. There's a good number of almost third-party data aggregators that are trying to fit some of that role there as well.
I mean, that's another layer of opportunity.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about the future of artificial intelligence. And when we talk about the rapid rate of adoption and artificial intelligence, what we can do with it, I mean, the future's yesterday. So let's take it maybe a year at a time.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what could we expect a year from now when it comes to that general term AI?
Yeah. So, our AI is underpinned by often the data that it's built on top of. And so the stronger the database, the better the AI is. So in other words, if we've got, too narrow of a model, it won't be as applicable to a broader population. So I think as we continue to get data, that'll continue to make our data set stronger, which is what the AI is trained on. So I think we'll continue to see incremental improvements for the accuracy of our AI. I think as we get better at our AI, inherently the workflow will get better because we're creating less noise. And so we'll continue to have higher and higher quality outputs for the physician, fewer, false positives or false negatives. And so I think that will have a demonstrable impact for our clinicians as well. So I think that's in the relative short term, I think we'll continue to see incremental enhancements.
I want to expand on that. So when you're talking about the clinician and the workflow, like maybe relief or at least shifting of what the energy and effort that goes into certain workflow, do you see clinicians perhaps a year from now being able to spend more time with the patient?
That's absolutely the goal. I think where AI can really serve an important purpose is taking a lot of the repetitive tasks out of the hands of the clinicians. Less time on report generation, your point, more time on actually patient care. And so if we can do our job with AI, we're delivering what they need to know when they need to know when they need to know it. And so that will allow them, again, to have more time to focus on the patient. So that's I think what we're all striving for.
I think we're seeing a little bit of that now. So I feel like a year from now, we're going to be really happy to see the shift.
Yep.
What about 5 years from now?
Yeah. It's fun to think about the future for sure. So I think one area that, gets me excited about being in this diagnostic space is I think diagnostics today, it's still largely somewhat reactive or retrospective in nature. And so a patient is going to have symptoms. A physician will prescribe a diagnostic and we're really validating what's already happened. But as our data sets get stronger, as our technology continues to get better, I think we have an opportunity to, kind of move into that realm of how do we predict and prevent something that could happen down the road. And I think that has a really powerful opportunity to really change how healthcare is managed. And so, from that perspective, I'm really excited about the future and think we have a lot to look forward to.
I'm really going to challenge you now. What is, take a decade, two decades, half a lifetime,
sure.
What is your most hopeful expectation for what the future could be when it comes to AI?
Yeah, it's kind of fun, but also sort of daunting to contemplate it that way. I think there's a couple big opportunities. I think there's certainly an opportunity for medicine to become more personalized. You know, right now, when I talk about, you know, we talk about AI, it's off a pretty broad, you know, population. And I think as, again, the data gets stronger, as we're able to connect both some of the attributes from a diagnostic perspective to understanding more of the outcomes, I think we can really tailor a lot of these preventative measures specifically to the individuals. And I think that will be really important. And I also think the hardware technology will continue to evolve. Right now, a lot of our solutions are kind of point solutions. So, hey, you've got a patch that you're wearing for one specific symptom that we think you have. I think over time, more of the platforms will be more integrated. And so we might be able to have a system that looks at multiple parts of the body that work together in combination. And I think that, again, has the opportunity to really transform how healthcare is delivered.
How do they say that you can't see the forest for the tree or the tree for the forest?
Right.
I'm zooming back,
yeah,
you have a much bigger picture, which seems like you can have a bigger impact.
For sure.
Well, Dennis, thank you so much for sharing your insights on the future of medtech and talking about the future of artificial intelligence. I'm so sad our time is over, but really, this is so much fun.
Caitlin, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right, a lot of energy in that conversation. Great way to lead into our keynote conversation between Chris Neumacher and Peter Menzuso. Peter is the company group chairman of Vision at Johnson & Johnson.
Welcome to the Device Talks Weekly podcast. At Mass Device, we cover Johnson & Johnson all the time. And, a lot of that news is related from everything, you know, from like, you know, cardiac ablation tech to, you know, surgical tools. But one, you know, really interesting part of the business that actually makes up about a sixth of, you know, the revenue for, and J&J's nearly $32 billion in medtech sales is its vision business. And innovations in that business always get a lot of attention on Mass Device. So I'm really excited today because I have here with me Peter Menzuso, who's the company group chairman of Vision at Johnson & Johnson. We're going to, you know, talk about the vision business and innovation, you know, around, you know, helping people with vision impairment. Peter, welcome to Device Talks Weekly.
Chris, I really thank you for the opportunity. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Fantastic. Well, hey, you know, to start out, let's just talk about, I mean, how did you get into MedTech and eventually the vision business at J&J? And you know, when looking at your LinkedIn page too, I saw you've been at, you know, J&J, you know, pretty much like most of your career, which that's less common these days. I'd be interested to hear from you, like, you know, why J&J was such like an awesome company to like, you know, really, you know, stick with, you know, for so many years.
Chris, I've been really fortunate to spend my entire career in healthcare and as you said, inside Johnson & Johnson. So over 30 years. And I will tell you, the areas that I've spent my time in is cardiovascular health, metabolics, eye health. And these are disease areas that affect masses of people. And for me, that's really quite important. And, you know, the time that I've now spent in vision is incredibly meaningful. And why do I say that? You know, you think about 2 billion people around the world in need of vision correction, and that number is rising. And you can imagine it's rising because of demographics, it's rising because of how we're living in this digital world. And we as Vision inside Johnson & Johnson, we're pushing boundaries of what's possible in vision to really help people live better, connect better, learn better, engage. And that for me is a space that I'm incredibly grateful to be in. And what I would say, what also inspires me is we're just scratching the surface on need and what's possible. So, you know, I look to what the next years can be, but I will tell you our focus and vision is one that is really rooted in great purpose and great passion, really to help patients with outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, how did you get into J&J? Because I saw you went to college in Scranton, which I used to live in Pennsylvania myself. I had a friend who way back was the newspaper reporter there. It's a fun city, but I mean, how did you, you know, you, you kind of got a finance degree. How did you get into J&J?
So originally from New Jersey, and you know, some of my friends went to the University of Scranton, really proud to be a graduate of University of Scranton. And while I was there, I had some connections inside Johnson & Johnson where I was fortunate to gain an internship. And that was between both my junior year to senior year, as well as upon graduation. And through that, I was able to come into our pharmaceutical side of our company in finance and development programs, and then just built a career inside J&J, all based on me being really curious about what we can do in healthcare and wanting to just add value. And as you said at the start of this discussion, 30 years later, it's gone exceptionally fast.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I mean, in the vision business, I could see somebody being like, oh, it's contact lenses, but there's so much more to this technology right now. Give us a quick overview. And what is the vision of business about? What is it best known for? What are the top products over there?
Yeah, you know, you could think about it as, you know, simple technology, but it's incredibly meaningful technology. And, you know, we're sitting in as a global leader in eye health, and in that, developing transformational innovations that are all about patient outcomes and really advancing how healthcare professionals deliver care. Our difference is we are experts in material and optical science, and taking those expertise with advanced technologies, that's bringing us into the areas that we're really known for, both contact lenses as well as intraocular lenses. And these are areas that we're going to continuously innovate. What I look at is in the space of contact lenses, we've been in this area for over 40 years. And you know, what I'm really proud of is we were actually the company that brought contact lenses, the first disposable soft contact lens to the market. And it was introduced as AccuView. And now AccuView is a world leading contact lens, and we're helping millions around the world. And what's so fun is when people ask, you know, what do you do for work? And I asked, do you know AccuView? And everybody, you know, they shake their head and they understand, but they know that we're bringing transformational innovations. And I go to what we just launched just recently, AccuView Oasys Max 1-Day Multifocal for Astigmatism. This is, again, in this legacy of firsts. It's the first and only daily disposable contact lens for people with both astigmatism and presbyopia. But then go to the other side to your question of what else are you doing in this space of eye health? You know, I think about what we're doing with our Tecnis intraocular lens platform. It one starts with cataract disease. Cataract surgery is the number one surgery performed around the world. And people may not realize that. And a cataract is not about if, it's about when. And it's just your eye naturally aging. And what we've been able to do is we've been able to really advance care in the space of cataract disease over the last 20 years, where we're working on lenses that mimic the way your eye naturally sees, creating solutions that go between far, near, and distance vision, but minimizing disturbances. And what I'll tell you, we just recently launched Tecnis Odyssey. This is a presbyopia correcting intraocular lens, full range of vision, you know, from going from near to in between, minimizing any kind of needs for glasses. And then Tecnis PureSee, which we've just launched, which is really looking at near and mid vision for somebody who wants to just also be comfortable with still wearing glasses. So we're really, really proud of what we're doing in the sense of living into our ambition, which is really making vision possible.
It's more than, you know, it says so much as, you know, as people age, I mean, quality of life is everything. I really think for like maintaining your health. I mean, if you're having vision problems and can't like, you know, deal with that, that's going to like cause all other kinds of, you know, problems potentially, because you're not going out there. You're not, you know, experiencing life the way you need to, and, you know, getting the exercise and the social connections you need. So,
And as you say that, you know, it's, you know, today we're touching 40 million people around the world, exactly like what you're saying, helping people live their best lives. And that still is scratching the surface. As I was saying earlier, you know, those that we're touching in contact lenses today from a category point of view, that's about 10% of those that could be in contact lenses. And when we think about intraocular lenses, you know, people that are getting into advanced optics, it's only about 10 to 15% of that population that is eligible for cataract surgery. So we're touching 40 million lives. We've got a lot of work and a lot of opportunity in front of us.
A lot more people you could reach. Just going back to the AccuView Oasys Max news, which was just kind of like what got us here, you know, talking today, that you just had that recent launch. I mean, tell me a little bit more. How does that work? I mean, so it's a multifocal contact lens for astigmatism. How do you, you know, create a lens that's able to, you know, provide that kind of like, multifocal feature?
Yeah, this technology, AccuView Oasys Max one-day multifocal for astigmatism, this is a true significant milestone for us, but more so it's a milestone for healthcare professionals and patients. This will complete our family of Max as we're launching not only spherical multifocal, but now the Astig for multifocal, and then we'll also be launching Astig. We'll have a complete family, which will be the world's first complete family. Specifically to your question, when you think about astigmatism is where your eye is shaped like a football versus a baseball. Nearly 50% of the population has an astigmatic eye. Then you also partner with just your eye's natural aging with presbyopia. Presbyopia is where, you know, many of you may have experienced this, or Chris, I don't know if you have yet, in low light with a menu, and that menu starts getting further and further away. That is something that we all experience, you know, over 45 or so.
It's as I've moved through my 40s, I've got to experience that more and more. I suspect I'm on the way to using your products, Peter. So,
well, I'd say now, you know, think about this. There's people that are living with both an astigmatism and presbyopia. We now have a solution for them. Before, those patients or those people had really limited limited options. This innovation changes all of that. We've been able to pioneer this lens that patients have crisp, clear, stable vision at all distances,
wow,
in all lighting conditions, but also important, comfort that lasts throughout the day. And, you know, we know that as a person ages, they've typically had to age out of contact lenses because of presbyopia. They don't need to now. And through better education, through more inclusive technology, we're going to reverse that trend. We're really, really excited. And this technology is an example of closing that gap of need that is really going to help enable people live their very best lives.
What have they had to do before these lenses came out? I mean, did they have to like swap different glasses through the day depending on what their needs were?
Yeah, alternatives were, you know, patients would move to spectacles. Patients would just drop out and really just not engage. And this now, through awareness that we're going to do to drive patients into practices educated, they will now know they've got a solution that can solve, and then they can get back to the best sight that's possible.
How do you create how does that technology work? How do you have a contact lens that serves, you know, the needs of people with both of those conditions at once, that they can just put this lens on and they'll get what they need?
I will say I am very grateful to work around a group of innovators that are, one, studying needs in the marketplace. Again, we get back to our material and optical science. We've got engineers and scientists that are unbelievably inspiring in this space. And what they've had to do and really overcome to bring this multifocal lens for astigmatism to market was four key areas. They had to look at stability. They had to look at material selection, fit, you know, for your pupil and your life. So the anatomy of the eye, really important. And then we have to scale. These are really complex technologies that we want to meet the underlying demand. So these were four really important areas that needed to be developed and mastered to make sure that we can meet the underlying demand that we know is there.
When you talk about materials, I mean, is there something especially that's become important in your space? I mean, I know and you know, when I talk about interventional cardiac, you know, technology, like, you know, there's, you know, minimally invasive, there's a lot of talk this day about nitinol. If I want to get people excited at a medtech conference, I mentioned nitinol. I mean, is there a particular material that is especially like, hey, you know, in the contact lens space, this has really enabled a ton of innovations?
You know, we want to work with polymers that are working with your natural eye. You know, the Max family overall has what we call tear stable technology. And this is where the polymer is working in a way that it's using your natural tear film to keep your lens hydrated. And that's where it is also, you know, enabling clear vision, clear comfort at the end of the day. But it's not just only the material. What we also have is what we call blink stabilized design. With that astigmatic lens, we want to make sure that that lens stays put so that vision doesn't get distorted or blurry when you blink naturally. But what also we need to overcome was pupil optimized design. You know, when you have a presbyopic eye, your eye begins to age and your pupil changes. We needed to overcome that in design. And then the last piece of technology, and you can tell I just enjoy this, is we're working and living in this world of digital, you know, distractions around us. We also have what we call OptiBlue light filtering, which filters out 60% of blue violet light, which highest in the industry. And, you know, you said earlier about people could think it's a simple piece of plastic. You think about these elements of four proprietary technologies. This is really advanced innovation that is changing what's possible in eye health.
So there really is like a secret sauce to like a specific like type of polymer with these different products that you've like really engineered that material to get to that point. Like, I imagine like with like the tear compatibility, like, so would that be like hydrophilic or hydrophobic? Which one?
You know, I would say it is technology that's going across our entire Max platform, and it's one that we'll continue to innovate from. Wow. And it gets back to, we want to drive the very best visual acuity, but at the same time, comfort at end of the day. And this will continue to inspire our innovation moving forward. And we will continue to continue to do studies with more advanced materials as well that will take us even further in the space of eye health.
Yeah, and the blue light filtration, I mean, that's really neat too, because that's like kind of a need that's really grown, you know, over the last, the iPhone came out in 2007, so it's been, you know, like 18 years now. But
it's interesting you say that, because it's all about fatigue. And with blue violet light filtering, it is amazing how it addresses fatigue, especially at the end of the day. I think about myself, so I do wear our Max multifocal contact lenses. And when I'm wearing them versus my spectacles, I can dramatically feel the difference. And that violet, that OptiBlue light filtering is making a big difference there.
Wow. Your eyes feel less tired at the end of the day, you know, because, you know, obviously you're running a whole business at Johnson & Johnson. I'm sure you're probably looking at your phone all the time, like, you know, staying organized and whatnot. So.
It is near me at all times, Chris, as you can imagine.
Yeah, me too. So, that's really fascinating. So the fact that you can tell that difference, that, you know, your eyes are less strained at the end of the day because of that, you know, material innovation that you have there. Anything else about like kind of, I mean, that's fascinating, like just all of the polymer science that is going on in your business. You know, I'm sure just like the design of the lenses, I mean, the manufacturing, I mean, how often is do your engineers like hit a moment where they're like, this is really cool, you know, how do we mass produce this, you know, so that this could actually be, you know, sold to the masses, you know, eventually?
What I would say there is for us, what's critically important is that we are working cross-functional in a highly collaborative way. So when we're thinking about innovation in its earliest form, we have R&D, we have clinical, we have manufacturing, we have global marketing, all at the table. And to your point about how is manufacturing being thought of and where are they getting inspired, they're getting inspired by the earliest of innovations. And then they are core, you know, they are core to our competitive advantage, making sure that we're producing high quality, repeatable, reliable supply that our customers and patients can depend on. And I am really confident, not only in our R&D organization, our clinical organization, but our supply chain organization. I'm very proud of, you know, the demand that we can meet and the demand we're prepared to meet.
Wow, like that whole supply chain, how does regulation work with that? Because I go to manufacturers who are making stuff in, you know, more like the heart space or surgery or whatnot, and just the amount of validation and everything that FDA requires is just you know, unbelievable. But I mean, how does it work in the vision space? I mean, is there that level of, like, you know, we need to have you documenting everything about your manufacturing processes in case we stop by and start asking about it?
We're in healthcare. We're a medical device technology. We're part of Johnson & Johnson, which is, you know, creates the highest level of standards and expectations of quality. So we're highly regulated, you know, very similar to other med tech industries and pharmaceutical segments of healthcare, whether it's the FDA or other health agencies around the world. Manufacturing standards. But I will tell you that also is part of our competitive advantage. I am incredibly proud of our commitment to meeting all local laws, all regulatory requirements, always measuring quality, because that is part of our reputation as well. You know, we're part of Johnson & Johnson. We have these world-leading brands of AcuVue and Tecnis, and that comes with, you know, a lot of responsibility, but also a lot of credibility in meeting those regulatory requirements and quality standards that you would expect of any Johnson & Johnson company. I'm incredibly proud to be in that environment.
Well, you know, you've handled like a number of different, you know, areas in medtech through your career. I mean, you know, what has been interesting about, like, kind of coming into this, like, ophthalmology space, because it definitely feels more consumer. I mean, the people, you know, select their contact lens and glasses products after, you know, going to an ophthalmologist. What kind of makes you interesting and special in that whole, you know, I mean, maybe you're a little bit more similar to diabetes in that sense too. I mean, that's a very committed population of people who are like, we need these devices. These are really important. But how does that kind of work?
Yeah, going back to the start of our conversation, you know, I shared with you I was in metabolic. So I actually spent about 10 years in diabetes, where, you know, a person has a very distinct role in their healthcare. You know, eye health is the same way. And to your point of, you know, the choice a person makes and how they engage in their contact lenses is crucially important. But there's also a healthcare professional. There's also a caregiver. There's dynamic channels to which product moves. You know, what is incredibly fun about the vision space is sometimes I think about it as a hybrid business. There's an element of, you know, pharmaceutical with prescriptions or healthcare, you know, done through prescriptions. There's a medical device, and then there's a consumer that you need to connect with and enable them to understand what is possible so that they go into a healthcare practice prepared, educated, knowing what to ask for. But also what's right and very important for us is they're then on their own, just like in the space of diabetes, until their next healthcare interaction. And this is where we need to also be thinking about supportive technologies, digital platforms that are keeping us engaged with the patient in between the time they're with their healthcare professional. So helping them and encouraging them to stay engaged with their eye health, helping them to understand the importance of a comprehensive eye exam, that they're booking their exams annually, giving them awareness to new information, to ask, you know, their healthcare professional educated questions on what technology is going to be best for them. This is the fun part of vision, because there are many stakeholders, and you are talking to the consumer. And you know, very proud of that environment that I'm working in with our teams.
Yeah, I mean, it's different too, because in a lot of parts of medtech, it's more like, I mean, you're serving the patients, but the, you know, the customer is the health provider. And I'm sure you have that with like the ophthalmologists that are prescribing things. But at the same time, yeah, as you said, it's kind of like this more consumer environment. I mean, even I'm thinking how like the Target near my house has a vision clinic in it, you know, where, you know, if I was buying milk and bread and I was like, gosh, you know, maybe I finally need to take the next leap and, you know, do I need to, you know, I should get my eyes checked out. I could like pop over there and, you know, see if they had a slot for me and, you know, get my eyes checked out and, you know, walk out of there with a pair of glasses or contact lenses even potentially. I mean,
I would encourage you to do that. It's, you know, the optometrist, when they look through your eye, it's almost a window into your overall health. You know, we have a statistic that more than 270 diseases can be detected through a comprehensive eye exam.
Wow.
And that's why it's, you know, we stand for that doctor-patient relationship. We stand for eye health and eye exams, because it's more than just visual acuity, cardiovascular health, metabolic health, you know, pressures in your brain can all be identified through a comprehensive eye exam. And it's, you know, I encourage you to stay on top of that.
Yeah, fantastic. So it's more than me just squinting too much at the menus at the restaurant. It's like this could help, you know, spot other things that are happening as I get older. So that's you know, we talked about like some of the innovations that, you know, like going on right now in J&J Vision, but I mean, any other innovations in the contact lens and the eye care space that have you excited right now?
You know, I go back to need, and you know, 2 billion people that are in need of vision correction, and the opportunity of deeper penetration inside contact lenses and premium intraocular lenses, that for me is incredibly exciting. And us finding ways to bring cutting edge innovation to continue to press on those most pressing needs in eye health, that is exciting. And, you know, things that I think about as we look forward is advanced intraocular lenses. You know, I briefly mentioned what we've just launched, Technis Odyssey. This is the fastest growing PCIOL in the United States right now. It's a presbyopia correcting IOL that is designed for full visual range, so a patient can see from far to near in between, minimizing the need for glasses. You know, that is incredibly exciting. And then I partner with that, you know, Technis Piercy that we've currently launched in EMEA and Asia Pacific. This is a purely refractive PCIOL that delivers uninterrupted, high-quality vision, high image contrast with low light performance. That's exciting. We want to scale these around the world. I also look at AI and how, from a tool point of view, it will help us advance clinical decision-making, also streamlining surgical planning, surgical procedures, but also optimizing, as we were talking about, supply chain. You know, thinking also about how do we make surgery less invasive, and we enable recovery time to be greater. And then the last piece, as I was talking to you about the engagement with consumers and patients, how we think about digital platforms that are supporting the eye care professional to deliver better, more effective, more comprehensive care that's improving patient outcomes. All of that is what I see coming, and also keeping me incredibly excited that there's much more need for us to solve for.
That's interesting too. I mean, how much are you into the the diagnostic tools around ophthalmology and the surgical tools?
So we are in, as we think about the space of intraocular lenses that we are driving with Technis as a platform, we are also in the space of phaco and fento solutions, as well as refractive. So we're comprehensive in the space of cataract disease and serving cataract disease, not only from intraocular lenses, but also from equipment, and then ensuring that we have data and insight to really streamline surgery and enhance clinical performance.
It's fascinating that, you know, what you were saying about the AI tools, because then it sounds like, you know, like it sounds like there's really opportunities, like maybe some of the like some of the rote things that, you know, people do during those procedures could be, you know, taken over in some way by AI, or you could have AI that kind of gives more suggestions or nudges to the surgeon to, you know, help them have better outcomes. And that's really exciting.
We want to look at ways that through data and through technologies, we can help surgeons deliver the outcomes that they've chosen pre-surgery to match post-surgical outcomes. In the end, everyone wants to ensure that we've got the happiest of patients.
Fantastic. And sounds like the digital solutions too, like there could be more to, I mean, could you see that automating in some way, like some of the things that ophthalmologists do, like just to make this more, you know, available to more people, make it even more convenient to get an eye exam, to, you know, figure out, like, you know, what needs to be done.
You know, what I would say there is, you know, the example of what we've just launched now with Acuvue Oasys Max one day for multifocal and astigmatism, that came out of listening to the optometrist of what is needed for their patients. To your point about, is there ways that we can help surgeons or ODs enhance how they're delivering care to their patients? That gets back to how we innovate, staying very close to how they're seeing unmet needs and in how they're serving patients, and us using our expertise to drive solutions. So I'm incredibly excited for what we will continue to develop in collaboration with healthcare professionals to improve patient outcomes.
So, you know, in the past, I mean, my gosh, I've been covering med tech now for, you know, well over a decade. And, you know, I mean, in past years, there's been excitement over the idea of drug-eluting contact lenses. I mean, there's been excitement over maybe potentially embedding electronics in the, you know, contact lenses, getting smart contact lenses. I mean, are those some things that you still, that you think could, you know, we could still see in coming years?
You know, we actually have driven first-in-class technology with drug delivery through contact lenses. This was our Acuvue Theravision with ketotifen. And it was very important innovation for us to really demonstrate how a contact lens can go beyond just visual acuity. We had also made a decision to discontinue it globally, and that was really around prioritization. As I talked to you about how we're launching Max around the world and the work that we're doing in intraocular lenses, there was prioritizations that we had to make. But I will tell you, you know, being able to demonstrate drug delivery through a contact lens, we were really, really proud of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your question about smart contact lens technology, I would say to you, I think that is a possibility. And looking at how contact lenses can go beyond just natural visual enhancement and through technology go beyond, you know, I would say to you, it's also thinking about a contact lens going into the space of eye health, you know, enhancing visual acuity, you know, smart lenses, they're in the near future. It's out there. We're going to make sure we're paying attention to disruptive technologies and driving in that space. But with the need that's in front of us today, we want to make sure we stay very, very focused in and the types of technologies we're bringing to market now as well.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like just incredible need with, you know, what you're bringing out at this time. But that sounds exciting to keep an eye out for, what's being developed and kind of these, you know, the smart contact, you know, lenses technologies, or even maybe, you know, drug eluting in the future. So just to wrap up, I mean, you know, what has you most excited for the future? Where would you like to see this space in, you know, 5-10 years?
You know, I'm really grateful that I get to work in this space with all the associates around the world for Vision and Johnson & Johnson. And, you know, it starts with making sure that we're improving patient outcomes and we're intervening, we're creating solutions that are really intervening early with what people need to maximize, you know, honestly, the outcomes of their life through sight. Looking at, you know, a legacy of firsts and creating new standards of care, I'm excited for advanced technologies that we're going to bring to market and that more people will benefit from. And then making sure that we're doing it as you would expect of a Johnson & Johnson company, with you know, a high focus on quality and safety and reliability and differentiation that is truly going to be meaningful to patients and healthcare professionals.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Peter. It was great speaking with you.
Chris, I really, really enjoyed our time, and I look forward to hearing back after you go for your comprehensive eye exam.
Sounds good. I'll give you a report when I get around to that. Thanks, Peter.
Chris, have a great day.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, thanks to our sponsor, InterPower. Don't forget to join us at Device Talks West. It's happening October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Go to west.devicetalks.com to register for that. Make sure you subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss a future episode of this or our other great podcasts. Please connect with me, connect with Kayleen Brown, connect with Chris Neumarker and Sean Hooley on LinkedIn. Of course, connect with Mass Device and Device Talks as well. We'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. All right, thanks again for listening to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.